going to play, Sam?
We're going to play Take Me Out to the Ball Game. We're all going to sing it, too.
And we welcome you to the first off-season edition of Meet Me at Mutual. Alan and I, it's Alan Medlock. You know that from Red Dirt, Red Bird, and a Medlock one on Twitter. This is Daniel Shoptaw, C70 at the bat, at C70 on Twitter. Alan and I did a show last week. It didn't record, so we're doing something a little bit different this time. But it's probably for the best for our reputations, maybe, that it didn't record. Because I don't know that we saw what was coming at all. The Cardinals go out fairly quietly against the Nationals, getting swept in four games and really only showing much. I don't want to, it's going to sound bad if you say much fight, but really there wasn't a whole lot of, it felt like at least, fight out of the team until the last half of the last game. Alan, boy, I really don't know what to think. I think because up until game four in that little bit of a rally, this felt like very likely the worst series, playoff series, the Cardinals had ever played.
Yeah, it was apparent in game three that they had run into a buzzsaw to me. Even as well, I mean, if you took the line of Michaelis in game one, and Wainwright in game two, and you would think, well, man, you at worst, they're going to walk away 1-1 with that. You know, just to give it completely shut down the way that he did, it speaks volumes of the Nationals. Mm-hmm. I think that it was just a bad, the whole lineup went cold at the same time, which we had seen at periods this year. And, you go up against playoff level pitching that you seem to handle about 3 weeks ago. About a month ago.
Then,
to see what it does to you now. And it just, it was overmatched. It sucks to say. But then, you have the big inning in game three, and they just kept pouring it on. And they did what it took to win. And then they did the one way to essentially eliminate you in game four by having the big first inning. And, it's tough to watch, but you knew pretty quickly that this they had to have a little bit of luck go their way that series, and they absolutely had none of it, and Washington had a bunch.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you look at some of the defensive plays that Washington had. Zimmerman in game one, preserving the no-hitter for a couple more batters. Rendon, I think, in game three, that he had such an outstanding play. There were just times where the few balls that were hit seemed to wind up in somebody's glove.
It's the way that I look at it is the two balls that he hit combined for RBIs in the right and, in left and in the right center didn't go nearly as hard as the ball that he stopped from DeYoung. what I'm saying? If that tells you which way the ball was bouncing.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was tough. I mean, you're correct because look at game four and you look at that big inning and it's partly because Colton Wong dropped the ball at second base and that doesn't happen very often.
They played very out of character and that started in game three.
Yeah, it did. I mean, if you were to say that, Jack Flaherty and Dakota Hudson had your worst outings, I don't know that anybody would really thought that going into the series, right? I mean, And Flaherty, he looked, he got rattled. And that's the thing. I don't want to say he got rattled. I say that wrong. But it did. It had that idea of just like in Dakota Hudson behind him, that one play that wasn't made, the Nationals took advantage of. Ozuna in game three, Wong in game four. They just, they were able to continue to hit. And that's part of it. That lineup I don't think we downgraded that lineup at all when we were talking about it. I think even last week we mentioned that, you know, their lineup runs deeper than what the Braves had. When you give them extra opportunities, most likely they're going to take advantage of it.
Sure, sure. And, you know, we had talked about last week of, you know, they have, you know, the middle of that order, the order has some punch. And it's one of those situations where Soto didn't make quite the impression that I thought he was going to. I thought it would be like an Acuna type deal. But it, of course, they played one less game and it wasn't nearly as tense. You know what I mean? That
wasn't.
So we probably didn't see the best of him anyway. Rendon's a superstar, and you know Kendrick is right there. It's pretty impressive to see what he did. And I've always said he's a huge hitter, and I have a long history of liking Kendrick. But yeah, their lineup's long, and it's one of those to where they're electric at the top with Turner. The Cardinals couldn't match that. They didn't have a single leadoff hit in the four games, and you know those are the things. That's the stuff that happens to you, you know, and it's. You know, one thing we did talk about last week was I felt like they may have gotten over the hump in the LA series to finally win that series, kind of let that monkey off your back a little bit. Then you can kind of play pretty free. And they certainly did. And they made they forced a lot of mistakes with the Cardinals that we haven't seen much of this year. And, you know, hats off to them, really. I mean, as painful as it is, I mean, it's after game three, I was like, hey, it's. One, you get back to St. Louis and anything can happen, but man, I'd just like to win a game and maybe make them squirm a little bit. And it never really got that close other than, you know, the fifth inning on, you know, last night. That's about as close as they could get.
Yeah, and the eighth last night, you know, they did have that chance with Carpenter up to do some damage. And I think that's the maybe one of those keys that we talked about, a lot of people talked about beforehand was – the Nationals bullpen, but when the Cardinals couldn't hit, you never got a chance to get into that Nationals bullpen. Yeah. I think we saw the most of them last night, and it almost did come back to bite them. You know, Hudson hits Molina, walks DeYoung, and you know, bases are loaded for Carpenter. You know, they had a chance to kind of get to him there, but you know, for the most part, the starters went what, seven innings at least. You know, when you can go seven. You know, and they have one or two capable guys, you don't get into that soft underbelly and have a chance to make up some difference if you need to. They just, you know, the fact that the bats were ridiculously cold, you know, cost them in so many different ways. And I think you and I were talking about it by game three, it really looked like they were playing tense, that they knew that any mistake was going to kind of doom them. And that led to more mistakes.
Yeah. It's, you know, they got out of their comfort zone, you know, there in the third game, they were really out of character in how they played. And it really, it you could really tell it early in game four to where, you know, a few things didn't go their way, then nothing went their way. And it got a little ugly and a little embarrassing. And of course, the ball finds you too, you know, with Martinez in right in that wall and the Bermuda Triangle right there where he has the catch. And, you know, it's just an ugly situation and just another instance where they got all the breaks. And, you know, the Cardinals just did not have an answer.
Yeah, it was – and, you could talk about some of Mike Schilt's decisions, and there are some, and we'll talk about them a little bit. But it just really boils down to – and I think more than anything, it just boils down to the offense. I mean, you hate to see Jack Flaherty, you know, scuffle like that and have that inning fall apart on him, which wasn't all the defense's fault. Cause I mean, at any point in time, you know, Jack could have got a strikeout or whatever, but it didn't help. And then Dakota Hudson just melting down quickly. I mean, boy, you know, if Wong catches that ball, I mean, the game probably plays out differently, but still you start thinking, man, they scored seven runs in the first and didn't score again. You know, maybe what happens if they score five in the first, you know, instead of seven or four, you know, do they come back the same way? Cause it felt like last night, and maybe it had something to do with the lineup changes or whatever, but it felt like last night, even though Corbin was so dominant over the first time through the lineup, they talked about having a plan against him, about trying to get that elevated. And it felt like eventually they were able to put that plan into motion and get the results they wanted, which is something we didn't see the rest of the season or rest of the series.
Yeah, not at all. And it's funny. It's a good point that you make. you know, you save a couple of those runs and it's either, you know, 4-5 instead of 7 in that first inning. And you don't know really what direction it goes. And then you may see the Cardinals storm back. I felt like the whole series, though, that even after the first two wins, they're pretty comfortable. But back in Washington, I felt like if the Cardinals could make it interesting with their playoff history, things would have gotten very tight. Mm-hmm. And you probably could have seen them play like the Cardinals did in game 3 and 4. And you never know what direction that goes. But yeah, I felt like yesterday, I don't know if it was if it was that change of lineup, if it was a backs against the wall mentality. I'm not sure. But yeah, I was surprised they got to Corbin like they did. But it's also one of those situations where you would think that in one of the first three games, they would have at least gotten lucky in the first three to do something, and they just didn't. So maybe it all came together in that one spurt they had last night. I don't know.
Yeah, it is a little bit frustrating because you, like you said, with the Nationals history, you know, and they did, you talked about it. They shook that monkey off the back a little bit, but by beating the Nationals, by beating the Dodgers. But if the Cardinals are able to come back from 7-0 last night, which, like you said, you know, a good hit by Carpenter last night might have tied it up. Mm-hmm. You do wonder if maybe that, I mean, again, on the flip side, they've got Scherzer, they got Strasburg. But you know what? You win that. If you won a game, come back like that, maybe the team loosens up. You know, they go out, maybe they could beat Sanchez this time around. It's 3-2, it goes back to St. Louis, and you never know. You do wonder if there might have been a little bit of tension on the other side.
You're right, and it's hard to imagine that Scherzer and Strasburg would have been as dominant as they were. Mm. Now, with Cardinals offense, it may not have made that much difference, but it's hard to think they could replicate the performances they put out the first time.
Maybe. Scherzer, maybe not. Maybe less than Strasburg. But yeah, I mean, you don't plan on taking no-hitters deep and things like that. And if the bats did get a little bit of a jolt by winning a game 4 like that, then yeah, probably are going to be better to respond.
Well, and you say that, and yes, it was no hit into the seventh inning, but Scherzer struck out 13 guys and walked to none.
Yeah.
You know, that's darn near perfect. You know what I'm saying? I mean, that would be very tough to replicate.
Yeah, although, man, Corbin, what did Corbin strike out? 12? 12. Something like that, before they started to get to him. They did not look good. And we could talk about, you know, the difference – in the series, well may have been the fact that in the National League Division Series against the Braves, Goldschmidt and Ozuna hit, 400 and 500, you know, respectively. In this series, you know what, they went at a stretch where they went 0 for 10 with 10 strikeouts. They really, Ozuna got a couple of hits here and there, but for the most part, the middle of the lineup really didn't do anything. And not that they had a whole lot of opportunities, didn't have runners on, and it's not all their fault, but that changes the complexion of a lot of things.
Sure. That's always the backbreaker, you know, cause that's the part of the lineup where you feel like you could at least get something started and then it cascades from there. Mm-hmm. And it didn't. I mean, there were a lot of big innings that were killed because of those two and strikeouts and that's the frustrating part, but that's also the part where you look at I'm sure there was an enhanced focus to not let those two beat you because no one else could.
Yeah, that's true too. And they very well may have prepared for those guys, especially seeing how well they had hit against the Braves. Let's talk a little bit then about Mike Shildt and his performance. I really felt like after two games in St. Louis where the offense really did nothing, that we would have seen a shakeup in game 3. And it took until game 4 to that. We know that Mike Shildt's a loyal guy. We know that Mike Shildt's a guy that doesn't want to have that knee-jerk reaction, but feels like in the playoffs, maybe that kind of knee-jerk reaction is needed when you've had two games like Game 1 and Game 2 for this series.
Yeah, what I'm about to say, it casts a little bit of doubt in my mind, but I didn't think you would see much difference from Game 3 just because I think you try to bank on that travel day as a reset day and see what you can get started after that. And that's combine that with the fact that he is incredibly loyal to these guys. I didn't think you would see much. And I was partially surprised that we saw a difference in game four that we did. But I will say, I will add to that, Fowler was the one that looked the most lost, I felt, you know, throughout the series. And I know that he hit into some tough luck, but boy, he struck out in quickly to start games, and that's always the worst way to get off the – you can't get off the ground with that happening. You can't get anything going. It was all – I felt like it was super important for him to start something in game three, and struck out on three pitches, you know, and it was, you know, downhill from there. I mean, it was tough. And I know it's easy for us to sit here and say that against a guy like Strasburg, but I mean, you're on the same level, so you got to do something, you know, and it just didn't happen. And yeah, it may have been a late trigger on that, considering that he didn't really hit against Atlanta either. So, you know, it's tough to say and it's tough to second guess, but I can completely see where it's coming from when you do.
Yeah. And like I said, it wasn't just him, you know, Colton Wong hit behind him.
Yeah.
What he, until game four and the first three games, they both went over. And then when you factor in, you know, Goldschmidt and Ozuna, you're looking at, you know, that's why the Cardinals didn't have a hit, except for, I think Ozuna got a hit in the second inning in game three, but they really didn't have but one or two hits in the first four innings through the whole series. Because they just couldn't get anybody on. And, you know, that means there's a lot of talk about Jeff Albert here. And Jeff Albert's not going anywhere. The Cardinals have committed to this path, if you will. They've removed a lot of guys like Greer and Badaska, and, you know, they're really kind of honing in on this. Is it just a case of it's difficult to turn around a, you know, cruise liner? Or is this a situation where, you know, we're going to have these kind of pains for a couple of years now?
Gosh, I don't know. That's tough to say. I did question whether how quick, if they're going to try this new approach, and you look at his background, and it's the, you know, the kinematic side of it, the analytical side of it, the you know, the complete breakdown and analysis of everything in your swing and your approach. I was like, there's no way that can happen in a spring. You know, at all. And you knew that there had to be a long-term plan on it. I don't know. I think a lot of this stuff is overemphasized, especially with the best players on the planet. But you do try to gain every advantage if you can, and you have the physicality and athleticism to be able to do it where most people just simply can't. But it is a results-based business, and ultimately those results are wins and losses. And it's tough to watch what we did with the guys that we know that can perform to have the cold stretches that they've had. And you wonder how much that gets in your head, how much it's paralysis by analysis a little bit. It will be interesting moving forward to see the approaches. That's why I think that they're going to be under a microscope in spring. That always gives you the weather, you never really know. You know, the guys that really make an impression because, you know, partially that's a lot of batted ball luck and you know, you're hitting in the fair conditions that day where some days they just, it can be terrible. So that probably won't tell us a lot, but I hope that we don't go into the year and reach the same type situations we did this year, to where the slumps weren't just several games. The slumps lasted weeks, and for some guys, months. And that's tough to swallow. You know, I will bang the drum for DeJong all day for a guy that's transformed himself into that type of shortstop who can hit 30 homers, who can hit 30 doubles, and he can change a game. But boy, he looked lost at times this year, and that's scary. You know, I felt like toward the end, we felt like there was a little bit of Fowler type. There was a little bit of Bader throughout the year that felt like that. And those are the things that worry me about it a little bit. I'm not a knee-jerk reaction on it. I think that it's obviously going to be a process, but it is concerning to see what happened to some of these guys this year. And I'm willing to give it a 1 year pass, but that would be tough to watch next year.
Yeah. There's an article from Mark Saxon on The Athletic about this. And I didn't have a chance to read it today. I'm just kind of skimming through it a little bit, but it was interesting to see that, you know, people like Harrison Bader said he doesn't like to use the analytics and things like that. And you wonder if there are players like that, if that's going to be the next thing, if they're going to try to move those players, because, you know, it does feel like the Cardinals are looking to get a unified voice here. And I think that goes along with the players as well, doesn't it? So, I mean, and that's maybe a discussion for the off season, but it feels like, I guess to me, it's like, look, this team wasn't a whole lot better, if at all, again, under John Mabry. I mean, we talked about the offense being terrible for, what, 4 or 5 years now. You know, it hit a terrible spot at the worst possible time, and I think that accentuates it. I know we've talked about the offense all year, but it was accentuated by the fact that they scored 6 runs on the biggest stage. But I, you know, I'm very interested. I think it's going to be very interesting to see as the Cardinals bring up young players like DeJong, who maybe he'll get a hold of it. And except for as bad as DeJong has been this year, I really got to give him credit for that walk last night in the 8th. Really thought that was a strikeout waiting to happen. He battled on that one and drew the walk. But, you know, maybe it's DeJong getting his footing on that now that he understands it. You know, what we talked about at the blogger day was that John Mozeliak said that maybe it was too much of a curriculum at one time. And so maybe it will be. But they, now that they've had this experience and now they understand what it's like in practice, maybe they can go home this winter and really work on some things and kind of get it more into their mental memory or whatever the case may be. I'm just a little bit surprised. And there's a story even points out that Goldschmidt's open to these kind of things. I'm a little bit surprised somebody like Goldschmidt, maybe even Ozuna, didn't maybe go back to some of their old things when things were struggling right this year.
Yeah. It's funny because I would love to read a complete breakdown of what they have in motion and what they have ideologically, because the things that we hear about as far as like the tracker on your bat to maintain bat path the whole time, it's all about consistency, and the vest that they wear that they have these guys throw on and to take batting practice with to see how much you deviate with your body throughout different portions of the year, like this one batting practice session, or when you're sore or when you're tired, and how much that's affecting your swing. It's all about consistency, you know, on both of those things. So I would like to hear more of that ideology, mm-hmm. because it's more about the kinematics and approach than it is about the analytical numbers, I think. And that's why I think it gets construed a little bit. I may be completely wrong. That's why I'm ending this with a question mark. You know, I'm not sure, but it makes sense. But I think there's probably a heck of a lot more to it than I would even could scratch the surface.
Yeah, I think you're right, though. I think you're right that we talk about it being sabermetric, but it's not just numbers. It's not just digging into the patterns like that. It really is, like you said, the kinesiology of it, of getting your bat going in the right way and seeing where your adjustments and what adjustments need to be made and all that kind of stuff and lots of things that boggle my mind, but hitting in general does. So I guess that's not a surprise. But
I know it's funny that these guys that are just elite, mm-hmm. and it just takes that little edge to make such a difference. I mean, that says a lot about the game in a good way, I think.
Yeah, it does. It does. That they're all and again, these are adjustments that they're gonna make, and then pitchers are gonna adjust to that and they're gonna have to make some more adjustments. That is the game within the game, if you will, the back and forth. And
true. Very true.
But, you know, even if it wasn't that case, look, this is an organization that prides itself on stability. Whether that's good or bad, I think it, for the most part, is good. But, you know, you look, I know Alex was talking about this on Chirps a little while back, but, you know, the Cardinals have had, what, 5 managers since 1980, full time. I mean, that's most of, for you and me, that's pretty much our whole entire lifetime. You know,
yeah.
And you had, you know, Whitey and Joe Torre and then Tony La Russa for a long time and then the Matheny, and now we've got Shilton. I know there's a couple interims in there, but for the most of those regular managers, you know, I can't imagine. I mean, how many some of these other teams like the Marlins or even the Cubs have had in that time period?
Yeah, well, Well, I mean, Jeff Zimmerman, who made his first World Series last night, they won their first pennant. His time in Washington, mm-hmm. they've had seven.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, yeah. I mean, that's what, and that's I that didn't even strike me as I knew that was a lot, but it didn't strike me as odd until you just brought that up about the Cardinals managers.
Yeah, you're right, because I think they're still paying like four or five of those managers as well, you know, because a lot of them haven't lasted. I mean, they would replace them in, after a year or something. Well, and, you know, a lot of people thought Davey Martinez was going to be gone either last year or earlier sure. this year when they started out 19-31. It felt like he was days away from being fired. And I think I was reading one of the things that might have saved him was the fact that they were already paying like two other managers. And so they didn't want to pay another manager not to manage for them. And it obviously worked out pretty well for them. So, it's stability is well, that's where I was going with that is, you know, they're not likely to say, oh, well, that was a year we're going to toss you. That didn't happen, especially not. I feel like this is another era to some degree coming up because, you know, back when Walt Jocketty was here, they started to turn the ship around when they hired Jeff Lanau and started drafting and started trying to develop their young players because they knew they couldn't go out and continue to, you know, get the big free agents or get the, you know, make those Jim Edmund types trades. Those trades just weren't going to happen anymore. They needed to develop their farm system, and they've been able to do that. And for me, this feels like another one of those turn points that they're going to say, look, we know we need to develop hitters. We know we need to be better offensively because we figured out the pitching side of things to some degree, but we've got to get better hitters. And this is the way we think we can do it. And they're going to put some resources and they're going to put some time into this. I mean, they're not going to cut bait, you know, even if the team struggles some next year, I don't think they would cut bait. I think you're going to give it at least 3 years because this is this process that they're trying to get all the way through the minor leagues. And they want to see the hitters like Dylan Carlson, like Nolan Gorman coming up with this kind of information and seeing if it doesn't pan out even more for them.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, it's that there's teams out there that are envious of the way that the Cardinals mm-hmm. can produce pitching. You know what I mean? And they produce it enough to where they have too much at some point. You can never have too much, but you know what I mean. They have a situation to where they can lose a guy like in the Ozuna trade to where it's not crippling like it would be to some other mm-hmm. organizations. And that probably, that you probably hit the nail on the head, to be honest with you. That's going to probably be the new age that they're going to try to develop hitters the way that they have pitchers at similar success rates, you know, to try to see where they can produce and all stay on that, the same ideology from, you know, the minor leagues on up, the low minor leagues on up, kind of like they do on the pitching side now, to produce average, well above average major leaguers. And it's a great outlook, I think. And that's a great point by you to point that out, because I just kind of thought it was the new age they're going to this, but this goes hand in hand into the things that we heard when John Mozeliak took the job of director, you know,
president of baseball operation,
you know,
yeah,
president. And I wanted to say director, but as president, and he made that comment of they're lagging in these areas, and this is where they're going to improve. They weren't, of course, they didn't tell what that was. They didn't play their hand or anything. But this kind of goes hand in hand with that.
I think it does, and I think this is kind of maybe some of this because. As you said, when Mozeliak went up as up a level, if you will, that was the idea that he could look at the big picture and see where they needed to change, see where they needed to, you know, point toward and leave some of the more day-to-day stuff to Michael Gersh. And I don't know how much of that's happened, but I feel like this is what we're seeing here is this idea of, yeah, we're not going to be able to draft the best hitters because the best hitters come off the board in the first, five picks, you know? We're going to have to be able to develop hitters just like we have pitchers and, you know, find the guys with, you know, the skills and be able to develop those skills. So this is a process. And I think to some degree, the Cardinals were, you know, maybe a little bit ahead of schedule by getting to the playoffs one, but to the NLCS, I know that was the plan. And I know that John Moselock wanted to get them there this year, but I think this was going to be a learning year, and he knew that. And he was hoping the pitching would carry them, which it did. And they're hopeful that now they can take that next step and, you know, start to marry the offense with this pitching staff that they have, because the pitching staff next year should be really fairly good. There doesn't mean that there's not room for improvement, but you know, if you have Flaherty and Michaelis and you know, others, you should be okay.
Sure. I would think that the pitching staff right now, without any moves made in any of the division, any other division team, I feel like they would be the division favorites with their pitching alone right now. You know, like I said, we've got a long way to go on that. And that is me considering Martinez starter and still with the organization, which could change. But like I said, without any moves, I would think they would have the advantage right now for just like you and I talked about. I mean, it carried them. You could probably expect that to be the case. That's their blueprint. And I think that this, the Albert redesign of the hitting side of things from the ground up, it's trying to catch up with where the pitching has in terms of development.
The one guy that stood out offensively in the last four games had to be Jose Martinez. Broke up the no-hitter in game one. He hit the ball that Taylor misplayed in game two that drove in a run, you know, and then got a couple of hits in game four. You know, we didn't see a lot of Jose, you know, especially down the stretch. He really just was pinch hitting here and there. But it was kind of nice to see somebody like that, somebody that had been a little bit overlooked, a little bit quieter. And again, I'm not saying he was overlooked. He kind of brought himself into being overlooked because he did not hit as well this year, and obviously the defensive issues. But it was kind of nice to see him kind of revitalize the team a little bit, or at least be something, you know, back to, you know, not to, to kind of the Jose that we think about from last year. I don't know if that helps him build a case for being on the team next year. I know he's got a contract, but doesn't mean he can't be traded. But it was, you know, again, we'd rather have some people help him out, but it was kind of nice to see Jose come through.
Mainly for the fact that he's just comes off as such a good guy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, and they were looking for something. He hadn't been able to give them much toward the end of the season, and for him to come up and do that was nice to see. I'm curious to see what the plans are on that. They've got to clean out some of the clutter in the outfield, and I have a feeling that unless the fifth outfielder pinch hitter spot, they really want to hold on to that. That it could be tough for him to make the team next year or to still be involved. But, you know, he's a huge clubhouse presence and everybody talks about it, and that may make a difference. But yeah, I don't know. But it was nice to see him succeed when he did. And like I said, well, he has spurts where he can hit. You know, there's no doubt about it. We've seen it, and we saw a few spurts this year when he struggled. But that goes along with everybody on the roster, really.
Yeah, it does. I mean, and you know, he obviously played himself out of more regular time. And again, part of that's the defense. But it was still nice to see him come back up.
Yeah.
Before we wrap up the look at the championship series, I think we probably ought to, like you kind of mentioned it earlier, talk a little bit about not only Miles Michaelis, but I really want to focus on Adam Wainwright. I mean, we saw Adam Wainwright both in the Braves series and here pitch like a veteran pitcher that had been there before that really wanted to win it again. I mean, we saw really good Adam Wainwright. You know, I think Mike Schilt, I think we can all kind of agree Mike Schilt left him in too long in game three and game two of the championship series. But I think Adam Wainwright gave the team all he had for every possible, you know, and they just didn't help him out. I mean, Carlos blew the game in the Braves series, and then the offense just didn't come through in game two.
Yeah, it was tough, especially under the circumstances. Those are the worst. Mm-hmm. I mean, you feel like Flaherty's going to have more chances to have those kind of games. They'll score for him, you know, down the road somewhere. And it actually did, you know, at one point. But yeah, it was tough. And it was one of those where I saw this a ton on Twitter and Facebook and social media of, man, he deserved better. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? One of those deals. And that, there's some nostalgia in that as well. But yeah, it was tough. And you talk about making a believer out of a lot of people. No one thought that that would really be the case with Wainwright this year. And we thought that they needed to have six starters ready to go because he couldn't finish the season. And man, did he pitch above and beyond expectations in several ways.
Oh yeah. I mean, we were thinking, you know, when it's time for Alex Reyes or some of these others that Wainwright, even if he's pitching well, will just slide into the bullpen because he's probably the worst starter. And, you know, I think some of the underlying numbers are not as good as the overall things, but man, there's so many games that you just remember Adam Wainwright pitching like Adam Wainwright can pitch, you know, this year. Mm-hmm. Just enough. I mean, he had some clunkers, don't get me wrong. And overall, is he more than a fifth starter? Probably not. And he turned out to be the Cardinals, you know, what, probably third or fourth starter at times. But, you know, and that's the case where, man, it I don't know. And this kind of transitions us a little bit. But, you know, Mark Saxon had in an article that people around Adam Wainwright are indicating he's wanting to come back. I think Wainwright himself said he says he's not thinking about the future yet. We know last year he signed that contract, what, really, really soon after the season was done. You know, I don't know if he'll come back for another incentive-laden contract like that. If he does, I think the Cardinals should sign him up right now because I think he provides value. He may not be as good as he was this year, but I think he still provides some value to this team. And if nothing else, that leadership is huge. And if he's willing to take another one of those hybrid contracts where if he goes to the bullpen, he gets paid as well. I think there's value for the Cardinals in that.
No, I completely agree. I think that needs to be done fast if that's the case. Mm-hmm. The question I want to throw at you is there a situation where you believe he can price himself out of the Cardinals' plans?
I think if he wants to play next year badly enough, he can't, because I don't believe Adam Wainwright goes anywhere else. Let's put it that way.
Okay. That's kind of where I was going with that. I have a really good friend whose biggest fear this offseason is that he's going to pitch somewhere else. And I just don't see it. I think the Cards make sure that doesn't happen. It's my gut feeling.
I think that Adam Wainwright has given off enough vibes and talked enough about his post-baseball life that he has come to a place where he can accept that, you know? Whereas he might want to play next year. He might have that urge to play. But he's going to play on his terms. And if he doesn't get those terms, he's more than willing to go home and start this next chapter in his life. I think there's a pull for him to want to play for what in theory could be Yadier Molina's last year. I think it's less and less likely that it's the case, but it's the last year on his contract as of right now. I think there's a pull for him to try to repeat what he did this year and see if the club can get back into the playoffs. But I think there's also this idea that, hey, I gave it all I've got and I'd like to go out on a high note. I mean, even though the last two games that he pitched in, he didn't win, he pitched some of the best baseball that we've seen out of him in a while. So it could go either way, but I don't think Adam Wainwright did well enough that some team's going to come out of nowhere and give him $15 million and the Cardinals are going to say, no, we're not going to do that. I think, and then him take it. Sure. I don't think another team would offer him much more than what the Cardinals would offer him anyway.
Sure. Yeah. And that makes sense. And that's well put, because I even made it in a text message today. I said, I'm almost at, to 100% confidence that he's either a Cardinal or retired. I go, I just don't see the other uniform being an option. But when you said that, I thought, you know what? Maybe I'm wrong on this one and I'm selling him short and someone can come out with a $12 to $15 million gig and say, hey, we need you to groom our young starters, and we can promise you, you know, you can get 15 to 20 or 20 to 30 starts with us right off into the sunset. And I'm speaking of Atlanta, and, you know, kind of be to us what you were to them last year, and you're close to home. Those, as we know, those deals don't typically work out when you get close to home, you know, unfortunately. But I do kind of get concerned about that. But yeah, I'm not, I don't say that with confidence. But I do say with confidence that I would be surprised.
You know, that is a possibility. That's, you know, general idea. But I also think Adam Wainwright, the reason that Adam Wainwright is this mentor figure is because he's built these relationships with these pitchers, and he has the cachet of being an all-time great Cardinal. And if he goes to Atlanta, I mean, they're going to respect him. They're going to know what he is, but he's not done it with those guys. He's not done it as part of the Braves organization. He's just another hired hand. And not that there's not value there, but it's not the same value as it is when he's in St. Louis. You know, I feel like, and I may be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that Wainwright said last year that if the Cardinals weren't going to sign him, he would have retired. I don't see, even with the resurgence that he had this year, that he would change that mindset. He's been, of course, you know, most players are, but he's been so tied into this community, so talking about how good Cardinal fans are and how much he loves St. Louis and all that. I just, even for that draw of being close to home, even if the Braves did do that, which I'm not sure that they would, I just don't think he'd, I think he'd just rather retire and, you know, start his countdown toward his red jacket than to end his career in a weird uniform.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the feeling that I get. And I just kind of wondered if it wasn't,
yeah,
more nostalgia on my
mind. And I think, you know, if you know, well, one, again, with the market the way it is, pitchers of a Wainwright's age don't get contract offers in general, much less, you know, really lucrative ones. But, you know, if Adam Wainwright was 3 or 4 years younger, you know, maybe there's a pull there. Maybe that he could do that. But where he's at in his career, I just don't see it. Now, somebody that most likely will be wearing a new uniform next year is Marcell Ozuna. We've seen that, you know, Marcell's free agent is in the year. We've talked about it a lot. Put up on his Instagram today, thanking St. Louis for 2 years and glad that he got to be with the fans, glad they got to the postseason, blah, blah, blah. Various things that doesn't rule out him coming back. But it really sounds like there's been a discussion and he knows that he's not in the Cardinals' plans. And I think we've talked about this for a long time, that it feels like he's a qualifying offer guy. But it was very interesting to see the swings of people in the last couple of months, really. You know, there was this time where nobody wanted Ozuna back. Then all of a sudden, he had to have him back because he was doing great. And, you know, the NLDS, everybody loved him. And then he didn't hit much this year. He was very, very swung back and forth. Still, it feels like he's not going to take that qualifying offer and he's going to be somewhere else. And I think that's, I don't know. What do we think of the Ozuna era? If that's the case, if he has played his last game with the Cardinals,
Probably underwhelming to most. And that's probably going to be, you know, last year is going to stick out to a lot of people just trying to get on track, that he seemed like he was doing almost half the year other than the hot month he had toward the end of the season. I really like Ozuna. There was a lot of things about him that really surprised me. Baseball IQ is one, and I know that people will laugh about that, but he was a phenomenal instinctual base runner. And I just thought Ozuna was a good player. And it's one of those to where I'm not saying they need to sign him to a long term. If he came back on that qualifying offer, I'd be pretty happy about that, just because it adds a little more certainty than what they have in-house right now. But yeah, it's funny you put it the way that you did, because reading whenever Brendan Schaefer put out last night, he said, well, he goes, the hugs last night told me one thing. He said, you can see for yourself on this. And, you know, it seems like his time was over type situation. I thought the exact same thing. I was like, man, that coming out makes me think that he had it, that Mo had the talk with Ozuna that he did with Lynn, that he just wasn't in the plans moving forward. Thank you for what you've done, you know, type situation. And it kind of goes back to a line in a Saxon article a couple of days ago that surprised me. Well, after the blunders in game three, Saxon made the comment in one of his articles that a qualifying offer at best, and that looks fleeting at this point. That really surprised me because I was like, I think they value their draft picks to not do that. You know, that's that. It really surprised me that he worded it that way. But yeah, it does seem like he's going to go for that multi-year deal. I guess the change in representation didn't make that much difference. And, you know, I like Ozuna and I hate to see him go, but there's a part of me that even in game three and the early part of game four had me thinking that, man, the Carlson era and maybe seeing Thomas and those guys a little bit more, if they don't go out and do something big, there's a little bit of juice in that involved that I'm excited.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. Ozuna grew on me a little bit this year, just personality wise and everything, but he wasn't consistent enough. He wasn't that anchor of lineup, even though he had one at bat all year long outside of the cleanup spot. It still didn't feel like he was that anchor. I mean, he could get on a run and carry a team, but overall, you know, it was just, I don't know. Now, if the Cardinals had no outfielders coming up or didn't have Dexter Fowler for two more years, you know, maybe I could see them talking to him because he's still, what, 28, 29, maybe? I can't remember exactly. I don't want to look it up. He's still well in his that prime era. He still could be better, but it's starting to more and more look like 2017 was the outlier, in that he's a good but not great player. And I don't know that the Cardinals – I think the Cardinals have paid it for enough of those kind of guys, right? I mean, it's just – so, sure. You know, I do realize that they're going to have to try to figure out where they're going to come up with basically 30 more home runs. And I do think we assume too much about young, unproven players. You know, I think a lot of us just assumed that Randy Arozarena would be the difference maker, and we didn't get to see much. We don't know if he still don't know if he's going to be, but the times where he did get to play, it wasn't necessarily just, oh, he's got to play again. You know, except for that game in Arizona, that was incredible. And I'm not discounting what Randy Arozarena did, and I'd like to see more of him, but you know, just because, and as much as, you know, I love Dylan Carlson, expecting Dylan Carlson to come step right in and hit 35 home runs and hit 280 and be this rock in the lineup, that's asking a lot out of a guy that hasn't played yet.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. If you're expecting that, you might as well tell yourself you're going to be mad and think the organization is terrible, like we've seen all year on Twitter from guys. Because that's just ridiculous, and you can't set expectations that high. You know, I know it gets frustrating in the development process to get some of these guys up. You get frustrated a little bit, but it's nice to see the new blood. That would be interesting. I do agree there's going to be that void as a cleanup hitter. I feel like I speak out of both sides of my mouth on this deal. And in the fact that I worry that Carpenter is going to be given until about mid-May to see if he has a chance to be that cleanup hitter for you. Yeah. You know what I mean? And I say cleanup just because he's going to be on the roster, and that's probably one of the only places he can hit if Edmund or Wong's not hit the second or leading off next year. But then in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, hey, you're close. You have elite starting pitching. Can you really waste another year of bad offense on that? You know, don't you have to get somebody to supplement a lineup if Ozuna's leaving? You just can't let him leave for more question marks. But that's kind of been the MO lately. So I really don't know. I'm also thinking that we probably don't see Carlson until May. Probably see a lot of him in spring. And he might crack the lineup. You never know. But it wouldn't surprise me if he did not, and we didn't see him until May. So, God, there's a lot of moving parts involved in that. That's why I think that their approach to the offseason is going to be interesting. And part of that interesting dynamic could be the fact that they don't do anything. Mm-hmm. You know, right. That it could just be ride with what they've got. So I think that they're going to be a team to watch for several reasons. As Cardinals fans, that may be good or bad.
It's going to require, you know, last offseason, of course, was the Bryce Harper thing, and we continued to bang that drum. But as soon as Paul Goldschmidt was on the market, you know, that felt like a possibility and obviously happened. The Machado was out there last year and things of that nature. I don't feel like there's that, you know, I mean, Rendon was going to be on the market. You've got guys like Cole and Strasburg probably who could help the pitching staff. And I'm not saying that they couldn't look that way, although they're probably not going to. But it seems to me that there's not an obvious fix and there's not an obvious place to go fix. I mean, you know, Paul Goldschmidt became available pretty early on. That made sense. 2 years ago, it was the Miami outfield and the Stanton run or, you know, you felt like they were going to get somebody out of that. I don't know what they do this offseason, and they need to do something, but there's a lot of pieces that are either not movable or they don't want to move. I think there's more pieces that are not movable than anything else.
Probably so. I mean,
so it's going to take creativity. It's going to take guts. It's going to take aggressiveness that I don't know if we've seen in a while. You know, Goldschmidt, I don't feel like was all that aggressive. I felt like that was just kind of a slam dunk. And, you know, because they gave away a guy like Luke Weaver that didn't have a spot, and they gave away a guy in Carson Kelly that wasn't going to play. I mean, we saw that this year. Carson Kelly wouldn't have played any more in St. Louis than he did the last couple of years, probably.
No.
And, you know, the Ozuna trade, they gave away pieces that I think they would probably like to have Sandy Alcantara or maybe Zach Gallen back. But for the most part, they were pieces that they didn't necessarily need. They may have to trade from a spot that they need or that they, you know, they're going to have to maybe, it may have to hurt a little bit. You know, you and I were talking about earlier before the show, and you mentioned, you know, Colton Wong has value. He very well may have the most value of anybody that's reasonably able to be moved. I don't know that the Cardinals want to move him. I don't know. They're definitely not necessarily advocating that they move him, but it may take something like that to, you know, get the pieces they need to make this team look different. Because it, even though it went to the runner up in the National League, if you will, it still needs a lot of different things.
Sure. I mean, that you can't fizzle out like you did this year. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And their offense was skeptical at best. I mean, I don't know if anybody trusted the offense, you know, going into it. And this is an offense with, you know, when from the outside looking in, teams are looking at it like, man, how can they be so bad? They have Goldschmidt, they have Ozuna, they have Carpenter. You know, where we know kind of the inside stuff to where Carpenter, last year, even at 36 home runs and over 40 doubles, it was kind of a, you know, it was a little bit of a smokescreen year, you know, considering how the year went with the bookends of terrible months. You know, Goldschmidt, I felt like Goldschmidt was very, very good, not necessarily great. But, you know, I think that there's some people that would argue that fact. You know, Ozuna, you know, you're right. You know, there's some that are still probably hanging on to 2017, but all in all, I mean, the offense was bad. I think that they were ranked, if I'm not mistaken, ninth or 10th in just about every category in the National League.
Pretty close. They were 20.
You can't get any more middle of the road than that.
Yeah, they were below 20th and really below 24th, I think, in the major leagues in most offensive categories. Not stolen bases, but that's about it.
Yeah, you know, and that's you feel like that's definitely an area where you can improve. Mm-hmm. And there may be some pieces out there. They're not going to pay the $30 million that's going to be needed for Rendon. As much as I would love to see that happen, you know what I mean? It's not
going
to. So yeah, there are going to have to be to improve the everyday lineup. There's going to have to be some. You're going to have to be a little sore about what you have to give up, and that would be a Wong or a DeJong, or you know, I'm not certain. You can't take a car. You can't find somebody to take Carpenter at this point.
No.
And you know, I don't. They seem up until the right around until the time that he went down, and even when he came up, that I feel like Bader's gonna still get an extended shot to see what he can do. But you know, that's you're limiting yourself right there as far as positions go. You're gonna have to get creative. I mean, you're gonna have to trade from a strength, which is gonna be your pitching. But you know, me personally, and like I said, I have a little skin in the game, and there's a little pride involved in this, but. Helsley did enough for me in the playoffs to show that he's probably untouchable. So other than that, where do you go? You know, that, yeah. And there, you know, as deep as the pitching is, it's not deep enough where you can probably swing to go get the transformative guy that you need, but you may get somebody, you know, a great additive piece. I just don't know where they would play. I feel like the obvious choices to where they could get upgrade. And everyday guys, probably center field and third. And I think there's incumbents there that they're hesitant to give up one.
And it's probably true, especially in the outfield. But then, I mean, you look at the outfield, and we've talked about this even before this year, but I think it's even more pressing. You know, even with Ozuna gone, you have Fowler and you have Bader, but you have Randy Orozarena, who's now made the major league. How much, and he didn't show that he had anything left to prove in Memphis. He needs to probably be in the big league roster. Lane Thomas played very well in the major leagues when he got chances.
Not to cut you off, but he's an intriguing piece to me.
Yeah. You know, you've got those four guys. You're not even talking about Dylan Carlson, who, you know, if he plays, and like you said, maybe he starts a year in Memphis. If he does, it's not, I don't feel like it's, you know, contract reasons.
Yeah.
It's, he didn't get a whole long time in Memphis last year, but he's, you know, he's probably not down there just terribly long. You've got those five guys. You know, you've got Jose Martinez, who's, even if you keep him, he's on the bench. We didn't even talk about Tyler O'Neill, who kind of, you know, was quiet and kind of disappeared in September because of usage. Those are a lot of guys that need to be on the major league roster, and you can't carry them all. Something's going to have to give. And I've talked, I don't know how many years we've talked about John Mozeliak's, you know, trading either all these starter pitching and all these outfielders or whatever they may have. But I just don't see how all those guys can come back next year and spend. I don't see how you send Randall Rosarena back to Memphis on a regular basis. You know, I don't see how you send Lane Thomas to Memphis. I don't see how, even if you could, I'm not sure if he has the options. I don't see how you send Tyler O'Neill to Memphis.
Yeah.
And let them play there. Those guys got to play somewhere. And if it's not in St. Louis, it needs to be somewhere else.
Well, and that's, I agree. I think there's a higher likelihood of the opening day outfield being O'Neill from left to right, O'Neill, Thomas, and Fowler, than a lot of people are giving credit right now. And I may that may just be me. I think that there may be an element of Bader's going to play regardless. Mm-hmm. But early, mm-hmm. I could see that happening. I could see O'Neill being penciled in as that cleanup guy, left fielder, and being a 3-4 win player comparable to, you know, Ozuna, and seeing if you could get an extended time to see if he can do it. I'm not the biggest fan of O'Neill. But it's intriguing. His power is intriguing, and his athleticism is too. He looks awkward doing things to me, but that, you know, I may be the idiot on that, and he may, you know, prove me wrong. I would like to see Thomas get a look, you know, just because his success in the minors. But you know, right then you just name those names without making a move. You see the glut of outfielders that they have just right off the top of your head. So yeah, you think they'd have to move? You'd have to move somebody just because of congestion. But we thought that last year as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and we'll see. Again, they have some pieces that are interesting. I don't know what kind of pieces they have to trade from. I don't know that the minor league is what it used to be. And I don't know what, I mean, you never know a trade market who's on the market technically. I mean, sometimes you do, but sometimes you don't. I mean, they've occasionally pulled a guy that you didn't really expect to be a guy that's going to get moved. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's very possible when you look at the contract situations and things like that, the 2020 looks a lot yeah. like this. And then you just have to hope, if it goes back to what we said last year, earlier in the show, I mean, that the work that Jeff Albert has done this year and whatever they can do in this offseason catches fire to some degree for next year, because that may be all that they can hope for.
That what you just said and the fact that Carlson can start in Memphis are in line with the most path of least resistance moves that the Cardinals tend to do. You know, mm-hmm. So that's why none of that would surprise me. And Daniel, I love the hot stove season because of the anticipation of it all, the building the rosters, the excitement of bringing the new guys in. It's exciting. I mean, I started that last night, and that's the beauty of the game, is that right after they're done, you're thinking, okay, how can they improve? There's a part of me that's excited about seeing some of these guys that we've wanted to have a long-term run but haven't, finally getting that long-term run. You know, I'll be the first one barking next year when these guys aren't hitting either. But there's a part of it that I'm excited to see. And I feel like you can count on a Goldschmidt bounce back to at least to where he is now, if not better. Carpenter is the albatross to me right now. And that's a lot of that's due to the fact that the numbers that we brought out about a month or so ago elongated to where it was a season to where it wasn't nearly as pretty as it looked.
Yeah. And that just brings up the whole extension discussion, which is probably something for another time, yeah. But didn't make a lot of sense. Didn't make a whole lot of sense at the time. Makes a lot less sense now after the season. So, yeah, that's going to be kind of interesting to see. You know, again, there's some hope for some runs, and, you know, then again, I mean, you could have a lot of guys sitting on the bench again. You just never know exactly how it's all going
to
pan out.
You and I talked pre-show to kind of do some off-season gearing up. We'll come back right after the presser to kind of show what the plans are, and sometimes they play their hands and sometimes they don't, and that'll be interesting to see what they do.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully, like Alan and I were talking last year, they did that press conference significantly later in the winter. Hopefully it's going to be more in the next couple of days. And we'll see if that's the case, but, you know, that'll give us something to do. We'll, you know, if you're new to the show, and, you know, we've had a lot of our listens have been up this year. Thanks for everybody that's been listening, and we appreciate anybody that might want to rate, review, and comment. But you know, we do try to do this, especially early on, fairly consistently. I mean, we'll take some breaks around the holidays, but we'll look at some things. We may take a look at the roster, kind of look at how people did this year. We'll kind of start sorting out what we think, you know, there are some options maybe, or what things may do. So stay subscribed. We should be fairly regular, but, you know, just because off season, you know, if there's a week where we just don't feel like there's much to talk about, we may just skip it. You just never know. So, we can have some guests. We had a lot last year. We had, Jeff Jones and Mark Saxon and, do we have anybody else? I feel like we did.
Captain PAD.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah. We'll have Kyle around. There's no doubt about having Kyle. I don't think of Kyle as a special guest. I think of Kyle as a special case, maybe. But I don't know about a special guest, because he's done it so many times with us, and it's always great to have Kyle around. You know, who knows? We may, you know, we've tried for Danny Mac in the past. Maybe we'll try that again. And, you know, some of the others, we'll try to do
maybe
some of that over this
Cherokee County. I can't make any promises.
Hey, if you could arrange that, I would be more than happy to listen in on that conversation for sure.
I'll leave it at that.
There you, All right. Well, until next week, and like I said, we're recording this on a Wednesday night, so it'll be a week from Friday probably before we get back together. When we get back, the World Series will be going. I guess the World Series could be over with by that time, I guess. I don't know how the schedule works out. But anyway, we'll be back to talk about the Cardinals, and hopefully we'll have that press conference to kind of break down and talk a little bit more about. But until then, for Allen, I'm Daniel. Good night.
Suter from the belt to the plate. A swing and a miss, and that's a winner! That's a winner! A World Series winner for the Cardinals!